From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He's pulling away by three. Jorge Chavez and Monarcos have won the Kentucky Derby. And the final time was 1:59.45. He was as fast as Secretariat.
Arrowgate, full out. Can he stick with it? California Chrome. Arrowgate still coming. California Chrome.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
It's Allie Darn, Affirmed, battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Allie Darn on the outside driving. Affirmed and Allie Darn heads apart. Affirmed's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
The Derby winner, Brand That Bird, closing a late gap, but it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched this network. It is the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our studios in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky, and extending a special welcome, as always, to everyone tuned in across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, in Louisville, and across the country, and all of you listening digitally through our website, either live or via podcast. You're doing that at horseracingradio.net. Well, this is the 21st day of March 2020. And that means we are only 168 days, 8 hours, 48 minutes, and 10 seconds away from the 146th Run for the Roses. What? Yeah, these are the times that we are living in. Churchill Downs making that historic announcement this week that the Kentucky Derby will be moved to the first Saturday in September this year because of concerns about COVID-19. And absolutely the correct decision, by the way. There were people, very few people, but I did hear people saying, well, why couldn't they have waited to see if they could run it on the first Saturday in May? Look, with everything that's going on in the world right now, and especially in this country at this moment, Churchill Downs made the absolute right decision in postponing the race to the first Saturday in September. And I'll tell you why that date works so well in just a minute. But this is the first time, I say it's a historic announcement, it is, the first time since 1945 that the Derby will not be run on the first Saturday in May, and only the third time in the history of the race that it hasn't been run in the month of May. So some history being made here this year. And this all coming on the heels of Keeneland canceling the entire spring meet earlier this week. And on Thursday, we received word that Aqueduct will be closed indefinitely because of a worker on the backstretch that tested positive for COVID-19. Now, the Kentucky Derby decision is just one piece of a triple crown puzzle that's going to have to be sorted out. And hopefully quickly. It seems as if the Maryland Jockey Club is open to the idea of running the Preakness 2 weeks after the Derby, which will be September 19th. We're still waiting to see if NYRA is open to playing ball and moving the Belmont Stakes to its customary position 3 weeks later. Some of the things I've read have not given me the indication that at this point, they're willing to make that call. Now, they have time. They have time. The Belmont not scheduled to be run till early June. So they do have some time. But when you look at the configuration of the Triple Crown, the Derby hasn't always been the first one, but you look at the configuration, you have, you know, the 2 weeks between Derby and Preakness, and then 3 weeks to the Belmont Stakes. And yeah, it's disappointing that three organizations didn't come out with a Triple Crown plan and announce it in unison, but if you follow horse racing for any length of time, that shouldn't come as a surprise. And I mentioned that September 5th is the ideal date, and quite frankly, if you ran the Preakness 2 weeks later and the Belmont 3 weeks after that, it all kind of fits together from a perspective of putting the races on TV. Now remember, September 5th is Labor Day weekend. college football is in full swing that weekend, so you're going up against college football. But NBC, who has the contract to broadcast the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown on television, doesn't do a whole heck of a lot of college football. Outside of their deal with Notre Dame, they don't run a lot of college football. Notre Dame doesn't play on September 5th. Their season opens the week before. They have an off date on September 5th. Perfect window for NBC to fill that with the Kentucky Derby. Notre Dame plays at home on the 19th of September. That's a 2:30 kickoff to that game. So looking ahead to the Preakness, if it would shift to September 19th, NBC has some room to play with there to work around and likely get the Preakness Stakes on television. And the Belmont Stakes, if it were to go 3 weeks later on October 10th, Notre Dame is home against Stanford. That's a 7:30 kickoff that night. Perfect. You go right from the Belmont Stakes into Notre Dame football. So the windows work for NBC. Of course, they certainly work for us here on the radio, too. We'd be there to bring you coverage of all three. If you're worried about University of Louisville football that weekend, they open their season on September 3rd, the Thursday before what would be the Kentucky Derby. They open at North Carolina State. They're not even home. So their stadium, which is right in the shadow of Churchill Downs, and the parking lots that Churchill likes to use for the Kentucky Derby, are all going to be open. The date makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it would have been nice for all three tracks to get together, announce something in unison. But we'll get that sorted out. Still plenty of other moving parts to figure out, too. The Kentucky Derby points races. Churchill saying that the points that horses, three-year-olds, have accumulated thus far are going to count, just like they normally would. And then they're going to have to create a new schedule throughout the summer, tying three-year-old races into the Kentucky Derby point standings to earn your spot in the starting gate. And you wonder what that does to major three-year-old races like the Haskell and the Traverse Stakes, for example, this summer. Well, Churchill will figure it out. But again, they're going to have to work with those other racetracks. And the racetracks, the other racetracks, Saratoga, Monmouth, any other track that's going to be affected in that fashion is going to have to shift the races around if they want to be part. The Traverse can't go the week before the Kentucky Derby. They're going to have to move the Travers earlier. Or you're going to end up having, for lack of a better term, the second tier three-year-olds in the Travers. And that's not what that race is all about. It's the Midsummer Derby. It's got to go earlier. Maybe the weekend of the Whitney. And if you do run all three Triple Crown races like that, October 10th being the Belmont, and again, this is not definite. So if you're just tuning in, this is not announced. It's not definite. I'm just saying that based on the NBC television windows, this works. If you get to October 10th and you run the Belmont Stakes, well, then you're looking at the Breeders' Cup in early November. You probably won't get a lot of those three-year-olds that went through the all three races of the Triple Crown back 1 month later, because they usually need some time off after that. But you'll get some. You'll get some that maybe skipped the Preakness, ran in the Belmont, or maybe skipped the Preakness and the Belmont after running in the Kentucky Derby, and then take 2 months and come back in the Breeders' Cup. You'll get some of that. So timing-wise, it all works. It all fits together. And I'm going to talk with Byron King from the Blood Horse coming up at 8:15 Eastern this morning. Byron has been covering that story and some of the trainer reactions to that news. I'll get a chance to talk to him in just a little bit. Ed DeRosa is going to be with me from Twin Spires and from Brist. Don't forget, you have the Twin Spires Fairgrounds Oaks and the Louisiana Derby later this afternoon. That is a points race for the Kentucky Derby. And then you have the Sunland Park Derby coming up tomorrow in New Mexico as well. So Ed's going to be here to talk about the Fairgrounds Stakes. Bill Mott has a couple of horses entered in the Fairgrounds today, and he has one in the Fairgrounds Oaks and one in the Louisiana Derby. He took time earlier this week to talk with Anthony Stabile on our Red Brand radio show, and I'm going to play that interview for you at 9 o'clock Eastern. Bill also talks about having to make adjustments to the schedule of these horses now with the Derby being later. And he shares his thoughts on last year's Kentucky Derby. A lot of people said, well, you know, not the way Bill Mott wants to get his first Derby, and he'll be the first to admit that. But now knowing what we know about the indictments against Jason Servais, who trained the unofficial winner that was disqualified, Maximum Security, maybe a little poetic justice maybe for Bill Mott. There is nothing that says that Maximum Security was running on anything other than hay, oats, and water in that Kentucky Derby, but it does raise an eyebrow. And Bill talks about that and shares his thoughts on last year's win in the Derby with Country House. This is Texas Champions Day as well. Down at Sam Houston, they're running like all other tracks without fans. Chris Griffin is going to be with me coming up at 9:16 Eastern. We'll talk to him about those races down at Sam Houston. And I want to thank Ed Bowen over at the Jockey Club for the idea for my guest in the 9:40 segment. That's Todd Roberts, the founder of Roberts Communications Network. With no fans in attendance, simulcasting has become even more critical. And Roberts Communications is the provider of these simulcast signals that you see at racetracks across the country. But I'm going to talk to Todd about some of the challenges that they have been facing in light of what's happening in our country. Some of the shutdowns, everything that's being affected by COVID-19. I'll talk to Todd coming up at 9:40 Eastern. And keep in mind, a lot of racetracks, after last weekend when they announced, okay, we're going to run without fans, the numbers, the handle numbers, were actually up for those specific days. Yeah, pretty incredible, really, when you think about it. So I'll talk to Todd coming up at 9:40 Eastern. Of course, our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, comes up later in the first half of the program. Our visit with Four Roses Bourbon and those folks down in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. And then Calling All Three-Year-Olds, presented by Spendthrift, toward the end of the program as well. So a lot of things to get to. I wanted to do something positive with our social media feeds this morning. So here's what we're going to do. Rather than asking a poll question about who's going to win the Louisiana Derby, there is a lot of good things that are happening in the sport of thoroughbred racing now. Forget about what's going on at the racetracks because of COVID-19. But on the farms, this is breeding season. This is also foaling season. And so many of you are working tirelessly, not just on the breeding end of it, but on the foaling end. And you're bringing hope into this world with new foals. So I want to see those foals. And I'm sure many people around HRN Nation would love to see them too. So tweet us a picture of the foals that you are seeing on your farms right now, the little babies that are coming into this world, and we'll share them. We'll retweet them, and we'll make it a very positive morning for the next couple of hours, and hopefully that keeps going throughout the day. And when you do tweet to us, tweet us your foal pictures using the hashtag HRRNFoals. Hashtag HRRNFoals, and everybody can search for it that way, and we will get the message out and the positivity, the hope that springs eternal here in the sport of thoroughbred racing. All right, going to get to a break. Byron King comes up next. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust Keep Safe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about Keep Safe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire, World of Trouble.
World of Trouble and Manny Frankel win the Jiper.
World of Trouble takes the Carter.
One of the fastest horses of his generation, the son of Cantharos captured both the Grade 1 Carter on dirt and Grade 1 Jiper on turf this year, and would go on to record 100-plus buyer speed figures in his last seven starts, including a 118 buyer as a three-year-old, the highest three-year-old buyer speed figure of 2018. World of Trouble, standing at Hillendale.
Unanimous champion two-year-old and three-time Grade 1 winner Classic Empire got off to a fantastic start with his first weanlings at the November sales. Averaging over $100,000 from 27 sold, up to eight times his initial $35,000 stud fee. Right on the same cross as champion freshman sire American Pharaoh, Classic Empire's outstanding race record is backed up with a stallion's pedigree. Being from the family of Harlan's Holiday, Ride the Rails, and Bold Nijin. Standing for just $20,000, Classic Empire looks like a serious value for 2020.
The Florida thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And what a successful 75 it has been. Florida breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, and along the way, making 170 racehorse millionaires, plus 66 Eclipse Awards, with two Florida breds, Imperial Hint and World of Trouble, receiving Eclipse Award nominations in 2020. The FTBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Eddie Woods is a perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple graded stakes winners, including 26 Grade 1 winners and four champions. Recent stars include undefeated three-year-old stakes winner Cafe Pharaoh in Japan.
There's going to be Cafe Pharaoh starting to stretch out. We'll be two for two.
And the talented Todd Fletcher-trained Kentucky Derby prospect, Gouverneur Morris.
Gouverneur Morris on the outside. He strikes to the lead.
A passion for hard work that produces big-time results. Find your next winner at the Eddie Woods consignment. Visit eddiewoods.com.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Wheel Away takes command by a head more than ready on the inside, but here comes Musaichi Pegasus with huge strides, gobbling up ground and getting the lead. Musaichi Pegasus with Kit DeSormo in front. Aptitude up for the place spot. Here's the finish. Musaichi Pegasus wins it by a length and a half. Aptitude got the place spot, and I believe it was Impeachment up to be third. So the 20-year jinx has been cracked, and Musaichi Pegasus wins it.
That's track announcer Dave Johnson bringing them home 20 years ago, as a matter of fact, in the 2000 run for the Roses. Musaichi Pegasus getting the victory. More Than Ready, Wheel Away, some of the names. I love listening to those old calls because you kind of forget about some of those horses. You know, you forget that that was the year that More Than Ready was in there for Todd Pletcher. You forget Wheel Away and, you know, those types of horses. So it's cool to hear those calls. But Musaichi Pegasus just put on a show beneath the Twin Spires that day. And I wanted to use that because this year is the 20-year anniversary. Of course, as I told you at the top of the show, the Derby not going to be run Saturday, May 2nd, will be run the first Saturday in September, Labor Day weekend instead. And I'm going to talk to Byron King from the Blood Horse coming up in just a few minutes regarding that decision and some of the trickle-down effects that we're seeing and some of the comments from horsemen, which Byron has been covering that story for Blood Horse, so I'm looking forward to that visit coming up in just a little bit. So I mentioned our social media today and wanting to spread some positivity when there is so much negative news out there on the television and on the radio. It seems like every time you turn it on, not the least of which is all the news about Tom Brady and where he's going to sign. Well, now we know. Tried to get away from coronavirus news, flipped it to ESPN, and every time I did, it was Tom Brady. And being a diehard Steelers fan, that wasn't a whole lot better. So our social media today, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, asking you to share your foal pictures. We want to see them. Everybody loves looking at the babies. And I know that there are so many wonderful babies. Tell us who they're by. Who the dam is. Let us know where they're being foaled. Whatever information you want to put in there, but please send us a picture and use hashtag HRRN foals when you do so. And I'll tell you, I was trying to come up with an idea that would be a little different for the show today when it comes to the social media. And as I was driving in, I came past Keeneland, and I came past those rolling hills and the vast expanse of all the beautiful white fences at Fabled Calumet. And as I was coming past, there were horses out in the paddocks and everything at Calumet. But there was one paddock in particular that wasn't far from the road, from Versailles Road. And the rolling hill kind of crested in the middle of the paddock. And there was a single horse standing at the top of the hill grazing. Kind of a darker horse. I don't know if I would call it black. It was kind of hard to see. I was trying to keep an eye on the road too. But kind of silhouetted up against the skyline. And it was just so beautiful. And it made you, me in particular, so thankful that we're involved in this great sport. And it made me realize, too, that, you know, that horse, he doesn't have a care in the world. And it was just so beautiful and so positive. And so I wanted to try to spread some positivity today. I know that, you know, it's breeding season and foaling season. So let's do that. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, hashtag HRN Foals. Again, trying to get a hold of Byron King from the Blood Horse. As they say in the business, we are efforting Byron. We'll see if we can get him on for a few minutes with us here this morning. But he was involved in the piece that appeared on Blood Horse this week after Churchill announced their decision to move the Kentucky Derby to the first Saturday in September. He was involved in talking to some of the trainers, including Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. And I think Bob's quote is going to be a staple of the sentiment expressed by a lot of different folks that are involved in the sport. He said, the Kentucky Derby, at least they didn't cancel it. But at the end of the day, it still is just a horse race. I'm more worried about everybody else in the world. And I think it really does, when something like this occurs, it puts everything in perspective. And you start thinking about what truly is important. Yes, the Kentucky Derby is important. It's what we do. It's our job. It's not necessarily who we are. The Kentucky Derby is important. And caring, you know, caring for the horses in difficult times like this is so important. And that, you know, that's the other aspect of everything that's taking place in our sport with Aqueduct canceling indefinitely, Keeneland canceling their spring meet, the Derby being moved. Now, there aren't horses on the grounds at Churchill Downs quite yet, but there are horses on the ground at Gulfstream and at Fairgrounds and at Tampa Bay and at Santa Anita and at Golden Gate. There are horses there. Somebody has to take care of those horses. There's horses on the grounds at Aqueduct. Somebody has to take care of those horses, even if we're not racing. And, you know, this, I was going to wait and do this this little piece here when I got to the Industry Star of the Week at the end of the first hour, but I think this is appropriate now as we wait for Byron. You know, he's busy. Maybe he won't make it with us here this morning, but we're going to keep trying him for the next minute or two. When you think about everyone that's around our horses that is now responsible, let's take Aqueduct, for example. All of the grooms, all of the folks that work in the barns that show up and are going to have to continue to show up every single day to make sure that those horses are okay. Now, they will do it safely. I have no doubt that they will do it safely and they will follow all of the protocols set forth by the World Health Organizations. But somebody has to take care of these horses. And I want to thank all of those backstretch workers that are doing this. And keep in mind, they're going to be affected just like everybody else by this. And they're going to need our support just like everybody else. But for all of those workers on the backstretch that are going to be taking care of our horses and continue to do so, thank you. And to every farm manager, every stallion manager, foal manager that's working on our farms right now, showing up every day, taking care of our horses, Again, I was going to save this for the industry star of the week, but we might as well do it now. Because you are the true industry stars. And in times like this, where things are totally chaotic and thrown out of sync in our sport, as an industry, we need to rely on you probably even more than ever. But you're there all year long, even when times are good. You're there on the backstretch. You're there in the barn areas. You're there on the farms, putting in long hours, working your tails off. And on behalf of the industry and myself personally here in the Horse Racing Radio Network, I want to thank you. And each of you are true industry stars of the week. And I know Stuart Morris, who came up with the concept of this segment, would be in agreement, because he oftentimes, even in his commercial that I read for him, he credits his team. Look, OBS just finished their sale. They held the sale as scheduled down in Florida, in Ocala. Well, somebody had to take care of those horses down there. And there were plenty of people that showed up and said, you know what? I'm here for the horses. I'm going to take care of the horses. So to each of you, thank you very much for your dedication and for your hard work. And please continue to do so as we move through this difficult period. Do it safely. But we need you more than ever, and I appreciate every single one of you. Again, send us your foal pictures, hashtag HRNFoals. Ed DeRosa is going to be coming up in just a little bit. I'll talk to Ed about the big races down at the fairgrounds. Maybe we can get a little glimpse of what's happening out in New Mexico as well with the Sunland Derby. Didn't tell him I was going to ask him about that, but I might spring it on him. Bill Mott, the Hall of Famer, who has horses entered in both the Fairgrounds Oaks and the Louisiana Derby, is going to join me. Well, he won't join me. He joined Anthony Stabile on Thursday, but I'm going to play that interview for you because he talked about a lot of different aspects of what's going on in our sport right now and also talked about those two horses. He'll join me at 9 o'clock Eastern time. Chris Griffin from Sam Houston going to be with me to talk about Texas Champions Day being run without fans at Sam Houston. And then Todd Roberts, the founder of Roberts Communications Network, with me at 9:40 Eastern to talk some simulcasting and the importance of simulcasting, certainly today when fans aren't allowed to be in attendance to watch the races live, how that impacts the importance of what he's created. I'll talk to him at 9:40 Eastern time too. Let's do this. Let's get to your Lexus Legends of the Turf. Obviously, Byron got tied up here this morning, not going to be able to join us. But let's get to your Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. And then when I come back, Ed DeRosa, the Duke of the Degeneracy, is going to be with me to talk about the races at the fairgrounds. But first, your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
This is the story of an amazing thoroughbred who indisputably left his hoofprints firmly embedded in the documented annals of the American turf. He was iron-legged, stout-hearted, and spelled courage with a capital C. When he passed away at the age of 21 on June 24, 1962, at Haggard Farm near Lexington, Kentucky, where he'd stood at stud for his owners, the Bieber Jacobs Stables, a racing legend had gone his way. He was the son of Equestrian out of Stopwatch by On Watch, was bred by the venerable trainer Max Hirsch, and was owned for a time by King Ranch. In 7 years of racing from 1943 through 1949, he won 35 races and earned $918,485 for owner Mrs. Ethel D. Jacobs, and was the world's all-time leading money winner until supplanted by Citation in 1950. In the span of those unforgettable 7 racing seasons, the durable veteran started 131 times. And, in addition to the aforementioned 35 wins, he had 35 seconds and 28 thirds in the money 96 times out of 131 starts, most of those being in the country's leading handicap or stakes races. At the age of 2, he had 3 starts in a maiden race and 2 nondescript claiming events. All those while racing in the spangles of the King Ranch, for whom he earned nary a nickel and never finished better than 7th. An arguably forgettable start in racing, for sure. On June 2, 1943, at Belmont Park in his third start, he was haltered by trainer Hirsch Jacobs for $1,500. Jacobs had claimed him for his wife. In the balance of that juvenile season, he won four minor races while earning a composite $16,000. Out of 28 starts as a two-year-old, his biggest win was on November 10th in the Republic of Peru Handicap at Jamaica, for which he earned a paltry $3,440. He started in 10 claiming races that year in the colors of the Jacobs stable. At the age of three, he started 29 times, won three, and placed 15 times, while earning slightly over $36,000. By this time, he had graduated from the claiming ranks and had won the Bolingbroke Handicap at Jamaica, but his best efforts were seconds in the Romer Handicap and the Wood Memorial. At four, this unlikely budding star began to bloom with nine wins and 19 starts, earning $225,000. At the age of five, he won eight of 20 starts and earned nearly $239,000. At six, he was 7 for 19, banking nearly $300,000. At seven, he won 4 of 11 while earning $95,000. And in his final year of racing at the age of eight, he started five times and had a second and two-thirds, picking up about $7,000. When he reached the handicap age of four, he shunned neither distance nor weight. In that year of 1945, the last time the Chicago Cubs were in the World Series, by the way, he won, amongst others, the Saratoga Cup at 1 3/4 miles while toting 126 pounds, and the Pimlico Cup handicap at 2 1/2 miles while packing 128 pounds. In succeeding years, he carried up to 134 pounds and over 126 pounds 18 times. Among his wins were in the Rancocas, Greylag, Brooklyn, Butler, Continental, Saratoga Cup, Westchester Handicap, Riggs Handicap, Whitney, Edgemere, Manhattan, New York, and Gallon Fox Handicaps, the Metropolitan, Questionnaire, Massachusetts, Sussex, and Aqueduct Handicaps, and the Belmont Gold Cup. Racing analysts no doubt point to his victory in the Gold Cup at the age of six, when he stormed from behind to whip Natchez, Armed, Assault, Phalanx, Endeavor, and Ensueño as his single greatest win. He stood at stud in Kentucky for a few years and in California with excellent success. This absolutely remarkable legend of the turf, a true darling of the racing public, who graduated from the ignominious bottom rung of the claiming ladder to unparalleled greatness, was none other than Stymie.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation is a top 10 third crop sire by earnings, black type winners, and graded stakes winners. With nearly $7 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by six black type horses in 2019. From his second crop, three-year-old daughter Serengeti Empress won the 2019 Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks and was runner-up in both the Grade 1 Test and Acorn Stakes. Serengeti Empress finished the year with a strong third to older mares in the Breeders' Cup Distaff and is a finalist for Eclipse Champion three-year-old filly. By Distorted Humor, millionaire graded stakes winner Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind, absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Menad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and Historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
The Florida Thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And what a successful 75 it has been. Florida Breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, and along the way, making 170 racehorse millionaires, plus 66 Eclipse Awards, with two Florida Breds, Imperial Hint and World of Trouble, receiving Eclipse Award nominations in 2020. The FDBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Right there is Jack the Umpire, along with Mr. Monomoy, who now looks to move through between horses. Heads are turned for home past the quarter pole. 3/4 in 1:12.20. Sha-Sha, Shake Me Up. Mr. Monomoy driven toward the inside. Here's Enforceable, who's rattling home with 1 furlong to go. And Enforceable has taken the lead. Mr. Monomoy battles. And on the outside is Silver Slate, but close to home with Julian Leperoux. It's Enforceable. Enforceable to win the LeCompte Stakes. Length and a half to Silver Slate. Mr. Monomoy was third. Stabbered fourth from Finnick the Fierce. Next.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna in our Lexington, Kentucky studios on this Saturday morning. The LeCompte winner, Enforceable, John Dooley with the call. He'll be in the spotlight again later this afternoon in the Twin Spires Louisiana Derby. Going to talk to Ed DeRosa from Twin Spires and from Brisk coming up here in just a couple of minutes. We'll get his thoughts on that race and on the Fairgrounds Oaks and all the big races taking place at the Fairgrounds later this afternoon. Mark Cassie was on the show last week and really blew up our Twitter feed with some of the comments, very candid comments that he made regarding the situation involving many of the trainers that were facing indictments. And you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and you can check out the podcast of that interview. It's there for you to listen to. But Mark, very candid. And now he's hoping that he'll take the next step along the road to the Kentucky Derby, first Saturday in September, with Enforceable, who looks like he could be any kind. Now, this is going to be the interesting thing when it comes to trainers and trying to put together their schedules now. They're going to have to, number one, wait for the new schedule to come out from Churchill regarding different points races that will be involved over the course of the late spring and summer and early fall. Well, it'll be late summer. And then they'll put their plan together. And as Mark said in the piece that was done on the Blood Horse this week, he said, we'll adjust. And everybody's going to have to adjust. You'll hear that from Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott, who's going to be with me at 9 o'clock Eastern, or at least his interview will be here for you at 9 o'clock Eastern. But they're all going to have to adjust. Ed DeRosa from Twin Spires and Briss set to join me momentarily, at least we hope. Maybe he's hanging out with Byron King this morning. I used to give Sean Clancy a hard time when he was with us as our paddock reporter on our race broadcast the past few years, and I would give him a hard time when I would throw it to him, and we'd have a technical issue, and he wouldn't hear me. I'd tell everybody he must be sitting at the bar. Well, it's a little early to be at the bar, I guess, for Ed and for Byron, but of course, most of the bars are closed now anyways. You can't go. All of them, actually. But Ed is with me now. He is indeed here. He is not at the bar. He's joining me to talk about the big races at the Fairgrounds later this afternoon. Ed, good morning, my friend.
Well, believe me, the home power has been going strong after four or 5 days with the homeschooling the kids.
You know, I have to tell you that one of the first things that Michelle and I did, my wife Michelle and I did when we heard the news that we may be stuck at home for a while, is make a trip over to Total Wine and make sure we had enough wine in the house to get us through.
Very important. I'm stocked with whiskey, thankfully.
Oh, I've got plenty of that, too. I'm ready. Zombie apocalypse, whatever comes next, I'm ready for it. I don't
Bring
have to leave the house. Yeah, yeah. Big day at the fairgrounds, my friend. Let's start here. You were at Oaklawn last week for the Rebel, and I saw a lot of the video you were tweeting out, and nobody in the stands. What was that like for you, standing there watching a race and nobody else around you?
Yeah, I think the two most common words we've seen about it, surreal and eerie, definitely sum it up for me. One of those moments you think, man, I'm going to be hopefully telling my grandkids about this. It was nothing like I've ever experienced. And, I've been to tracks that haven't had a lot of people in the stands. But it's just totally different when it's zero. And, when you toss in the fog that was rolling in early Saturday morning on Rebel Day, and you couldn't even see the horses, you could just hear the hooves, and there's no one around you, that's definitely some apocalyptic stuff right there.
Yeah, we used to say that Keeneland was racing as it was meant to be because they didn't have a track announcer years ago. Not to have any fans is really surreal. That's taking it to a whole new level, but a very necessary
For sure.
step considering everything that's going on. Also heard this week that New Orleans Saints head coach Sean Payton has tested positive for COVID-19. He is in great shape. He is self-quarantining. He was at the races that weekend, was he not?
He was, and makes me thankful for once to be a Browns fan because I'm so tuned out on the NFL, I didn't know who it was.
You had to have some idea.
I didn't talk to him. I was probably 6 feet away from him, so I was the safe distance away. But after I came back upstairs, and someone said, "Oh, did you see Sean Payton down there?" And I knew the name. I'm not that out of it. And I said, the Saints coach? And I'm like, yeah, he was down there. I think he presented the trophy, and I just had no idea. So, ended up working out because I definitely, as Brittany did, I certainly would have, wanted to talk to him and interview him about, the experience of being there. So hopefully my ignorance saved me some exposure.
Yeah, Brittany Erton from TVG, of course, interviewed him, and she is self-isolating too, just in an abundance of caution. She sent out a message yesterday, said she was doing fine, but we certainly are thinking about her and everyone that's affected by this horrific virus and dealing with it right now across the country. Let's talk about some positive stuff and the big news at the fairgrounds today, the Louisiana Derby, the TwinSpires.com Louisiana Derby, and the TwinSpires.com Fairgrounds Oaks, both for three-year-olds, one for the fillies, one for the boys. Let's start with the big one. Let's start with the Louisiana Derby and kind of work backwards, Ed. Share your thoughts on this race here. We're going to see Enforceable as the likely favorite.
We are, and we talk a lot about the Kentucky Derby being such a great opportunity with the 20 horses and what that means for betting. And obviously 14 is exponentially smaller, but it's still a pretty rare instance. You get, A, this full of field, and B, there is, I do think Enforceable will be the favorite, most would agree, but, he's lukewarm at best in this full field, assuming there's only two scratches later today. So this is, to me, really compelling from a wagering standpoint. I think it's the type of superfecta you can count on paying, hundreds of dollars even for just a dime. I do think Enforceable is the most likely horse to run his race, but I think from a parimutuel standpoint, he's opposable on top as the favorite. Just doesn't have the Brisnet speed rating that's among the best in this group. It's just a notch below. I'm going with Wells Bayou on top. I think he can take them all the way around at this peculiar mile and 3/16 distance.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that too. A little different than what we're used to seeing with the Louisiana Derby, a mile and 3/16. That has to affect the way that you approach it from a handicapping perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely, a lot of people say the jump to a mile and an eighth is even bigger than the jump to a mile and a quarter. Maybe not a lot of people, but some people say that. I'm not sure I believe it, but certainly the mile and 3/16 is, you know, any added distance, I think, beyond a mile and a 16th is, to me, when pedigree really comes into play once you're in that two-turn zone. So, yeah, it's on my mind. And, you know, I think Wells Bayou, given he's one of only two E-types on the BristNet PPs, meaning early running style, and the other one's marooned in an outside post 11. If Laurent Giroux, you know, is able to clear, which no reason to think he won't from the three hole, and get the rail and smooth sailing, you know, I think he's dangerous today to one to go all the way, even with the added distance.
Yeah, post time for the TwinSpires.com Louisiana Derby, 5:49 Eastern. That's 4:49 local time at the fairgrounds. The race preceding it is for the three-year-old girls. That's the TwinSpires.com Fairgrounds Oaks, grade 2, mile and a 16th on the main track. What do you think of that one, Bud? That could go a lot of different directions. I know Finite is going to be a heavy favorite, but is she that good and that unbeatable in this spot?
Unbeatable is always a cagey thing, especially maybe with some questions about the weather later today. So we'll see how, you know, how the track's playing, if it is muddy or sloppy. I do see her as the most likely winner in this all-stakes pick four, though. The unfortunate thing there is probably most other people do, too, so it's not really an opinion that I'm separating myself with. But I am against the favorite in all three of the other races we already talked about in Forcible. So I'm likely to plant my flag with Finite. I thought her, I remember the order here, the Rachel Alexandra was spectacular.
Yep.
The Silver Bullet day, she was 3-5, and I actually tried to beat her that day, and it just looked like, oh, man, she really worked at 3-5, and then sort of the numbers came out, you know, Ragazin, et cetera, and it looked like she had a move forward in her, and she sure did. I mean, I was blown away. I thought it was an awesome race. So I'm gonna let that ride. I mean, her trainer, Steve Asmussen, knows how to keep these fillies going, especially early in the year, and I just feel like if you don't use her, you might as well not use her. If you don't single her, you might as well not use her at all and just try to really blow things up. But I'm in the camp that she's by far the most likely winner.
All right, that's race number 11. It's the penultimate race on that 12-race program at Fairgrounds this afternoon. We're working backwards, by the way. So race number 10 is the Grade 2 Muniz Memorial Classic at a mile and an eighth on the turf for the older horses. Again, another race that I think maybe a little bit more wide open than what we just talked about in the Fairgrounds Oaks, but how'd you see this one?
For sure, yeah. Synchrony's 3-1 on the morning line. I'd be a little surprised if he's actually the favorite. I kind of see, you know, 3 or 4 vying for favoritism here. So another one of those races where I think you want to make some decisions and make sure you're not using all the chalk, especially if, like me, you're singling Finite. Instilled Regard is the most interesting. I really wouldn't want to see him any lower than his morning line. But that Pegasus World Cup turf has just proven to be a blockbuster race. I mean, we saw Bricks and Mortar come out of it last year and have an incredible season. And then this year, Zulu Alpha repeated his effort in there. And then Magic Wand, I didn't think, disgraced herself on dirt going halfway around the world a month later. So this, to me, looks like a really productive race. And the morning line on Stilled Regard, I'm in, but any lower, I'll probably want to look at some other options. You know, this group, Mike, other than Zulu Alpha finally winning 2 in a row, they've been exchanging blows for like 2 years now when you look at horses like Channel Maker, et cetera. So I'm definitely not wanting to take a short price, but gosh, that Pegasus World Cup turf looks really formful.
Yeah, that's race number 10. Race 9 is the New Orleans Classic, which is a mile and an eighth on the main track, and some familiar faces in here, and another wide open event.
Yeah, Silver Dust, the morning line favorite, and I'm definitely looking to oppose him. He has to get 4 pounds to the field. His stablemate, I'm really excited about. He was my pick in the Kentucky Derby last year. Unfortunately, one of those missed the wedding and went to the funeral scenarios. But I thought his Louisiana Derby at this course and distance was really strong. He was 22-1 that day in retrospect. You know, given his form, maybe that was the right price. But Brett Calhoun definitely got this one going in the right direction. And then the Derby, I know he had some training issues earlier in the week, and it just wasn't his time. But the return, I thought, was really strong, but not so strong that he can't move forward again. By no means. no means do I think the tank was emptied. And I don't think we'll get 6-1. He's just sort of a no name, but hopefully with the stablemate and the hot Pletcher horse shipping in, 4-1, 9-2, I definitely think is possible. And this is going to be a horse that I do single on some tickets to allow myself to maybe get finite beat by taking a stand early. But I definitely like by my standards. And of all the horses we've talked about, he's my most likely win bet.
That's race number 9, the New Orleans Classic. Again, the all-stakes pick 4, race 9, 10, 11, and 12. Ed just took you through all of them kind of in reverse order. We worked backwards to, forward, if you want to look at it that way. Ed,
I call that the Missy Elliott style of handicapping.
Yeah, there you go. Listen, the news coming out this week that the Derby would shift to Labor Day weekend, September 5th, and Byron King was scheduled to join me in the last segment, but he got tied up with some things there at work, couldn't make it. When you look at the changes that are going to have to be made now, the probably most important, other than deciding the other two Triple Crown races, is the points system and how these new points races are going to play into things and the schedule, which is going to be totally different than what we're used to seeing over the course of the summer.
Yeah, it's the Derby, so I think a lot of, psychologically, we're going to hold on to maybe some of the quote-unquote rules we've thought of, needing two preps, needing a race at 9 furlongs. By pushing this race back, all that just has to go out the window. And it's the Derby from a prestige standpoint, still most important race in the world to me, certainly in the country for three-year-olds. That doesn't change, the drama of being there. I mean, all that's going to be the same. But the reality is, looking forward to handicapping this race is it's to me definitely now more like the Travers than it is the Kentucky Derby. And I have an inkling that a lot of these trainers, with so much foundation under the horses with points already, speaking of horses like Tis the Law, Storm the Court, who's, still in the mix in my mind, they can go into this with one prep in August and be fine, whereas I'd never want that for a horse, in the first Saturday in May, just running in a 100-points race and that's it. So, there's going to be a lot of change to mentality, and, all of a sudden a horse like Charlatan, who I'd be against at a short price because he didn't race it too, that's meaningless now. I mean, Bob Baffert won the Travers with Arrogate, similar type horse. I have no issue now with a horse who made his debut this year.
Yeah, and it also gives a horse like Maxfield, for example, an opportunity to make it to the Kentucky Derby because he would have been up against it trying to get there on the first Saturday in May. Probably wouldn't
Without
have made it
doubt.
In. So, yeah, it's...
No,
it's,
I don't think so either.
It's interesting.
And, the reverse, unfortunately, is true too, is now... you're sitting on a horse like Tis the Law, who I have a lot of respect for, and others with top points. Now you're thinking, man, I got to keep them together for another 4 months. I mean, that, and that's part of the challenge of these big races. I mean, obviously you want them to run fast and peak on the big day, but I think it's really underappreciated by fans and, some in the industry, what it takes just to get these horses ready to train and race day to day. And now you've added 4 months to the schedule when, obviously, you're really excited if you had a horse like Tis the Law in the barn. And you still are, but now you're basically resetting the clock back to December.
All right, go get your handicapping products at brisnet.com and bet the race is coming up later this afternoon at twinspires.com. He's Ed DeRosa from Briss and from Twin Spires. Ed, as always, appreciate the visit, my friend, and we'll remind people they can catch you and the Big A, Anthony Stabile, every Thursday night from 6 to 7 Eastern on the brisnet.com call-in show right here on HRN. Stay safe, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
Will do. You do the same. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Ned, like all of our guests who appear on the program, receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion by going to EmbraceTheRace.com. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by a barren neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti. A precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4/5, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. Caraconti possesses a strong Stormcat male line and hails from a top female family, which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. The only second crop sire with graded stakes winners on dirt and turf,
Cara Conti's first crop of three-year-olds includes Sol Volante, winner of the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis Stakes, and undefeated colt Kenzai Warrior, who was pointed to the Group 1 English 2000 Guineas. Value priced at just $10,000, Cara Conti gets the gold according to Chris McGrath's Value Podium in the TDN. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Cara Conti at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Pick number 424, consigned by Eddie Woods, agent, a dark gray or brown filly by Bernardini.
I'm going to go by 75, nobody gets 600, and anybody else? You want to play more back there? 575, 600, no mistakes now. 575, nobody gets 600, and 575, 600. And the back 575, thank you.
Hip number 424, a two-year-old filly by Darley Stallion Bernardini, consigned by Eddie Woods, sold for $575,000 to Stone Street at the OBS March sale this past week. And that promising youngster is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Bernardini is the sire of 21 graded stakes winners on dirt since 2015. Only Tappet and Curlin have more. To learn more about Bernardini and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Welcome back. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of this show, all you have to do is head back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows. If you're sitting at home and can't get out, head over to our website, and hopefully we give you a little bit of an escape from some of the news that's out there each and every time you turn on the television and the radio. So head over there, horseracingradio.net, and check it out. Want to take a minute here. We've got a couple of minutes before I get to hour number two, which includes Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott, Chris Griffin from Sam Houston, and Todd Roberts from Roberts Communications. Last night, my wife and I ordered takeout from a local restaurant, and I want to remind you that there are so many people that are affected. We all know this, though. There are so many people that are affected outside of our sport, our industry. And many of those are local mom-and-pop businesses and local restaurants. And in particular, I sent a message. We ended up going to the local restaurant last night and getting takeout, bringing it home, just to kind of support them and give them some business as best we could. They were so appreciative that we were able to do that. So if you're able to, you know, think about those folks and try to help them any way you can. But I was planning to get takeout from Tony's. They were doing carryout here in Lexington. And if you've heard me talk about Tony's of Lexington, Tony's of Indianapolis, and Tony's of Cincinnati, they've been a longtime supporter of this program. I was going to go down and we were going to get takeout there, curbside service, and found out shortly before we were going to head downtown to do that, that they weren't offering that anymore and that they were going to close for a certain period of time in compliance with all the recommendations made by the governor here in Kentucky. And I texted the owner, Tony Ricci, and asked him, how come they were no longer offering the curbside? And I thought this was wonderful. He said that he decided to process the food that they had
on hand at all of his restaurants and distribute it to all of the employees in each of those locations that he knew weren't going to be able to stay involved in working for the restaurant now with the shutdown. So that is the reason that Tony's is not doing it. But there are still so many that are, and I encourage you to support them. And by the way, you can still go to the Tony's website, Tony's Steaks and Seafood. Just Google them. Go to the website. You can still get gift cards. So support them in that way. It helps these local businesses stay in business. I was over to see Bob Cleveland at Woodford Feed the other day. They're doing a great job, still keeping everything rolling. But keep that in mind. The local businesses, the local restaurants, there are so many of them that need your help and need your support in these difficult times. Again, coming back with hour number two, Bill Mott will kick it off, the Hall of Famer, talking about his horses in Louisiana and some other angles as well. We're back with more right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming real quiet. He's a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 124th running of the Kentucky Derby.
This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One wheel. Looked impossible.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
On the inside, unaccounted for. On the outside, Soul of the Manor. And here he is, the unconquerable, invincible, unbeatable Cigar.
And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum on this 21st day of March 2020, edging ever closer to the first Saturday in September in the Run for the Roses. So strange to say that. Now, 168 days, 7 hours, 48 minutes, and 48 seconds. So, hey, for those of you who love the countdown that I do every Saturday morning on this program, you're going to get it for another 168 days to the Kentucky Derby. And then, of course, the Breeders' Cup right around the corner from that. So we'll start the Breeders' Cup countdown and be interesting to see how all of these things play out with the different changes to the stake schedules now at various racetracks later this summer. And let's hope we're back to a sense of normalcy by then. But Churchill banking on it, moving the Kentucky Derby back to September 5th. If you missed any portion of this program, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast and of this show and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts as well. Bill Mott, represented by a couple of horses at the fairgrounds today. Of course, his leading lady, at least at this point anyway, is Antoinette. She goes in the Fairgrounds Oaks. Modernist goes in the Louisiana Derby. And on Thursday, Bill took the time to visit with Anthony Stabile on our Red Brand Radio show. And here's what he had to say, starting with Antoinette.
She's been doing okay. I mean, we've got, you know, a trainer talk. You know, I'm sure you hear it all the time. I'd like to have one more work in her. But I got to looking at the race, and it was a short field. It looked like there was, you know, one outstanding horse in there. The old racetrack adage is you're not supposed to duck one. So, you know, I went with that and she's there and we'll get a run and see where we go from there. I guess nobody knows where we're going from there, but, you know, with the environment, today, but, you know, I think she's ready to get a race in her and see where we're at.
You started her on the turf. Her first two starts were on the turf. And then when she won that Teppan, it was an off-the-turf race in late fall at Aqueduct. Did she surprise you how well she ran on the dirt that day?
I was very pleased. The filly had always worked well on the dirt. We were always happy. We said, you know, she's doing very good, working well. And then we worked her on the grass, and we thought, maybe she worked a little bit better on the grass. And so that's where we started her out. And the opportunity confronted us, you know, when the race came off the turf to go ahead and try the dirt, and it worked out very well. I mean, it was, you know, sometimes these things are just a matter of trial and error and, you know, try to see what, what's going to work the best. But she seems like one of those fillies that kind of is able to do both.
And, of course, you were talking about a finite, it looks like, the filly to beat in that Fairgrounds Oaks. But like you said, you don't just duck one. They're going to try and make you live up to that adage with modernists. There's 14 of them in the Louisiana yeah. Derby. There were 23 of them last time. They had a split the Risen Star. Talk about him. I know this is a horse. You and I had talked about him a little bit in the fall. This is a horse you've been high on from pretty much from day one.
Yeah, and he, you know, the good thing is that he's been slowly, gradually just getting a little bit better, a little bit better, a little more mature, more professional acting. I mean, he's really, you know, he's at that point right now where he's handling everything really well. And he, you know, frankly, surprised me the way he stepped up last time. You know, I didn't think we were in a spot that we had to win. And he really, from his maiden race to the Risen Star, I thought it was a big move forward for him. You know, he was quite professional about everything. And if he, you know, if he's one of those horses that just keeps taking those little baby steps forward, you know, he's going to be pretty good.
He seems to have improved as the distances have gotten longer. Namely around the two turns. He's 2 for 2 at a mile and an eighth. In a year that's going to get stranger as we go along, Fairgrounds decided early on to make this race a mile and 3/16. Was that part of the thinking with him to get him to the Risen Star, to go the 9 furlongs, and then, you know, when the Derby was supposed to be in 5 or 6 weeks, have that mile and 3/16 underneath his belly?
Right. I thought it was a great progression, you know, for a horse that wanted the distance. And you know, after his maiden win at a mile and an eighth, the fact that the Risen Star had been, you know, extended to the mile and an eighth or 9 furlongs, I thought that was a great fit for him. And then this actually increased another 16th, and it looked like, you know, from watching him run the last two times, it looks like that should be beneficial for him. It fit into his schedule very well.
I want to talk about Country House in just a minute. We'll get to him. You've mentioned with Antoinette, we don't know where we go from here. You mentioned yeah. the thought process of modernist and getting him the mile and an eighth, the mile and 3/16, and then boom, get ready for the mile and a quarter of the Derby. That Derby is now 6 months away as opposed to 6 weeks. Have you given yeah. any thought on how you're going to attack this longest Derby trail in the history of the Derby trail?
Well, and Anthony, I'd say, you know, with the change, I think it, you know, when it's that far out, I think you still have it in the back of your mind. But I think at this point, then I think we've got to concentrate more on some of the other races that are hopefully going to be available for us. And, you know, before that, and, you know, if we may, I don't want to discount the Derby, but if we make it there and we're still in good shape in 6 months, we'd love to be there. But it's, you know, trying to plan for that or replan for that, is going to be, you know, is going to be another challenge. So, something that you don't usually have to go through. I mean, we were fortunate enough with Modernist, you know, that he came around right after his maiden win, and he seems to be progressing. You know, it's not easy to keep him good for 6 months. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, we'll give him a fair chance at it. We'll space his races out enough, you know, that he'll have the opportunity to make the Derby. But by the same token, in the meantime, you know, instead of one more race, there's probably going to be a couple. So two or three, who knows? You know, we'll just have to wait and see.
We're talking with Hall of Famer Bill Mott. He won his first Kentucky Derby last year with Country House. He's back on the trail. Man, you know, the Derby and controversy just seems to follow you around, Bill.
Yeah, did well. We were probably in the most controversial of derbies last year, I suppose, and still controversial.
Well, yeah, that's what I'd like to talk to you about briefly, and then we'll let you go. Indictments last week. One of the guys named in the indictments, the trainer of Maximum Security, the horse who crossed the line first in the Kentucky Derby that was won by Country House last year. A lot of people after the Derby last year, I don't want to say refused to acknowledge Country House, but they felt like Maximum Security was the winner when, in fact, in the history books, it will go down as Country House. Your thoughts on the on what transpired last week and about Country House in general?
Well, in regard to the Derby, I mean, the Country House, in my mind, was the Derby winner 23 minutes after they completed the race. I mean, when the stewards hung that up and made him the winner, I mean, although it was, you know, kind of I kind of had a numb feeling about it. They put us up. I was happy. You know, I would have preferred to win the race, finishing two lengths in front of everybody. That would have been great. But he was still put up as the winner. And you know, I'm sorry to see that all the indictments last week. I'm sorry on one hand. I'm glad that they came down on the other hand. I mean, I think there's been a lot of, you know, there's always a lot of scuttlebutt in our business about, you know, people that they think might be taking an unfair advantage. And I guess this just shows that, you know, they are policing the business and the racing in a very stern manner now, and you know, I think they're trying to do the right thing, and I'm sorry for the people that got involved in that mess. I mean, it's really it's unfortunate that they've ruined their careers by getting involved, and I'm sorry they took the wrong step. You know what I mean? They you know, sometimes you know there's a very fine line between right and wrong and good and bad and following the rules and not following the rules, and you know, you take the wrong, you know, you step on the wrong side of that line, and the ramifications can be devastating, and I know it's devastating for some of those people that got involved, and it's, you know, sorry about that, but hopefully the game is going to be, you know, maybe people wake up and you know, I'd like to see everybody put on a level playing field as much as everybody else. As far as Country House goes and the, you know, any thoughts that, well, was Maximum Security, did he have an unfair advantage on Derby Day? I mean, I can't presume that. I mean, I don't know that.
Does it let you enjoy the win a little bit more now?
You know, it you know, I was slowly enjoying it more anyway, so it does make you wonder. You know, it you know, the those thoughts are probably running through everybody's head, you know, what went on Derby Day. But at this point, I don't think any of us have proof of any of that. So I've just got to leave that with the experts.
Great stuff from Hall of Famer Bill Mott, talking about a variety of issues, including that Kentucky Derby victory last year with Country House. And my thanks to Bill for taking the time to join Anthony on Red Brand Radio this past Thursday. When I come back, we're going to turn our attention southward to Sam Houston and talk to Chris Griffin about Texas Champions Day. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
The Florida Thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And what a successful 75 it has been. Florida Breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, and along the way, making 170 racehorse millionaires, plus 66 Eclipse Awards, with two Florida Breds, Imperial Hint and World of Trouble, receiving Eclipse Award nominations in 2020. The FDBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Orb, winner of the Kentucky Derby and Florida Derby. His runners have scored on both dirt and turf. His recent stakes success includes Mrs. Orb, winner of the Bay Ridge Stakes at Aqueduct, Pippin Stakes victress Whoa Nelly, and Derlou, a determined runner-up in the Grade 3 La Cunada Stakes at Santa Anita. Classic winner, classic pedigree, Orb. Standing at Claiborne Farm.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Unanimous champion two-year-old and three-time Grade 1 winner Classic Empire got off to a fantastic start with his first weanlings at the November sales. Averaging over $100,000 from 27 sold, up to eight times his initial $35,000 stud fee. Bred on the same cross as champion freshman sire American Pharoah, Classic Empire's outstanding race record is backed up with a stallion's pedigree. Being from the family of Harlan's Holiday, Ride the Rails, and Bold Nijin. Standing for just $20,000, Classic Empire looks like a serious value for 2020.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
She's our fastest, needs a way through us in behind runners, and Sing Prada Sing is at the back of the field. Anyone's race with less than a quarter mile to go. They kick for home, Dark Desert Wine. Mighty Ferrari, now Zerelda. She's our fastest, now sprints through at the rail. Out wider, Troop Confession, five across the racetrack with an eighth to go in the Yellow Rose. Here comes She's Our Fastest. She's down towards the inside, and she takes the lead. Out on the outside, Zerelda, She's Our Fastest has taken command, and She's Our Fastest, much the best in the Yellow Rose. Zerelda finished second, Dark Desert Wine in third in 1 minute 11.40 seconds.
She's Our Fastest, the winner of the Yellow Rose at Sam Houston last year, about to defend her crown in those races coming up later on this evening. First post, 7:45 Eastern. It's a good card, too. You have 10 races, and all of those stakes races, the Texas Champions Day. And to help shed more light on what we can expect at Sam Houston later tonight is Chris Griffin from Sam Houston. Chris, appreciate the visit, my friend.
Hey, Mike, good to talk to you guys, and I appreciate the visit. It's nice to get a little bit of an escape here once in a while, just to kind of talk some races.
Yeah, tough times, not just at Sam Houston, but around the country, everybody dealing with COVID-19, making the appropriate adjustments. You guys continue to race. You're doing it without fans. Tell me a little bit more about what's going on down there at Sam Houston.
Yep, so no spectators, just closed to the public, TXRC licensees only, and we're just, you know, we're asking for essential personnel that's preparing the horse for that run and that race, and everyone keeping their distance from one another, and you know, just a kudos and a hats off to our housekeeping crew and everybody that works on site, just keeping everything clean and sanitary. And we're doing our best, and we're trying to keep live racing going as far as the product on the track. And when we can welcome fans back, then we would be really excited to do that. But it's different times, and we're pushing through it, and we got great racing, so that we're looking forward to that, and we got some stakes races, and we'll just do what we do and get it done.
Yeah, let's talk about that racing product, Chris. All of the big races coming up later tonight, the stakes races, and I mentioned this is Texas Champions Day. Explain what folks can expect when they're tuned in and watching the races from Sam Houston later.
You'll see too much bling quite a bit on the sire side, but Texas Breds, seven stakes races. We've added some, and we're over, you know, 525,000 in those purses, so we'll have those seven for 75,000. Looking forward to some turf racing, hopefully. We've had some rain in the area, so we'll just kind of keep an eye on that, but we're good to go. You're going to see some really nice Texas Breds, some Texas Bred Horse of the Years and Sprinters, and some good turf racing, and again, we're just hoping that it can kind of carry over from Texas Preview Day, where you got a kind of a glimpse and you saw Deshaun Parker win four out of four races. Not sure he can go seven for seven, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I was listening to that rejoin as we were coming back from the commercial break, and She's Our Fastest, winning the Yellow Rose last year, back to defend that title later tonight. This is a horse that is just so consistent.
Yeah, and there's a lot of horses actually on the card up and down that are very similar to that exact thing that you're talking about. You talk about Texas Bell, you talk about Redditori. I mean, these Texas Breds know that they like racing in Houston. They know how to get the job done, get to the winner's circle. So, like the outside post, I think, you know, at 6-5, she's not offering you a ton of value. Just won that stake over at Delta Downs. I think, you know, there's a few in here that could compete with her. I don't think she's a slam dunk in this spot by any means, but you know, when you're taking a look at even horses that just broke their maiden, and they could be improving type of horses. So maybe the value is underneath as far as some of the wagers if you really like her on top. But you take a look right next door, you know, I'm a discreet lady with Cabrera and Broberg. I think Cabrera will make this one run a little bit. She may not be quite the quality yet of She's Our Fastest, but she could be in the mix, and she's 6-1, so why not give her a glance?
What does a state bred day like this mean to racing and the industry in the state of Texas?
Well, the entire season has meant so much to Texas. I mean, when we talk about House Bill 2463 and everything that's gone on as far as the rise in purses and the horseman response, but you've seen now the breeding operations and the TTA and getting involved in the sales that are coming up. We're putting Texas is already on the map, but it's just continuing to grow. And I've always talked about that Sam Houston, as far as our facility, is still relatively young. You know, 26 years in existence is still relatively young in the larger landscape of horse tracks across the country. So, For the horsemen and the people, I know that, and especially during these times, I mean, they're wanting to run. They get an opportunity here to run for these $75,000 stakes races. It presents an opportunity for them to run against other Texas spreads where you're not going to get offered that, you know, always nationally. So it's a real day to showcase and highlight the Texas spreads, highlight the Texas connections. I mean, we're talking about Danny Pish, and you've seen Mike Netherland and All Meat and Broberg and Asmussen, they're obviously going to have their runners that are ready to go. So it's a nice day to celebrate Texas Breds, to celebrate Texas, and just where we've come this season. We're overcoming quite a hurdle now, but, you know, there's a lot of things to be excited for and a lot of promise, and we're the first stop as far as the racing calendar in Texas, and we encourage everyone to continue to follow the Texas Breds and the breeding program as it continues throughout the year.
Yeah, with everybody concerned about what's happening with the COVID-19 outbreak here in the United States, horse racing continues to be one of, if not the only, major sport that continues to keep its doors open, at least for the time being. We'll see how long that lasts,
sure.
But doing it in a fashion that is considered to be safe and within the protocols that are laid out by the World Health Organizations. So for the community in Houston, Texas, how important is it, Chris, for you to be open and to, even if people can't come out, to be able to put something out there where it gives them an outlet to be able to watch the races and go to the website and follow along in that Houston community?
Yeah, so that probably relates more to our owners and trainers and folks that, you know, the owners, we've somewhat encouraged some of the owners to watch on the feed if they can, because we are so limited on the space. And we know owners, it's so important for them to be here to see their horses and for all the connections and their friends and family. And this is a day that you would love to have everyone in the winner's circle and take a great winner's circle photo. But it's just times are not allowing for that right now. So what I would say, and what's tough, Mike, is that, you know, Texas doesn't offer online wagering. So as far as the bettors are concerned, you know, they can consume our product by watching it online right now at shrp.com, like you said. And we hope they do follow along and that they do watch. And we've seen plenty of responses from folks on social media and wanting to get online wagering. And these are things that can be discussed as we continue on. You know, we love everyone in Texas to be able to stay home and watch and wager on us. I'm sure many would say yes. So we'll get there, and it's kind of a step by step. This is a fluid situation, one day at a time. But we're offering racing, and we're looking forward to it. And things change every moment, so we're just hoping to get the card in and get these horses on the track, and hopefully put on a great racing product with our Texas Champions Day, which we're really excited about. And we just hope that people are watching us wherever they are across the country and being safe.
How do you sum up this entire meet, Chris? You and I talked back before some of the other big races that you had earlier in the season, some of the graded stakes action. How do you sum up what you've seen from this racing season at Sam Houston and the groundwork it might lay moving forward?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Mike. But taking on the marketing manager role and the track announcer role, you know, wearing a couple different hats in the office has given me exposure to everything that we're doing on every side, every aspect of Sam Houston Race Park and our operation. What we've done this year has been phenomenal. I think as far as the racing office and Frank Hoff and his entire team and our marketing team and also the trainers and owners and horsemen and jockeys, and I just can't thank all those people enough, because all parties have to work together. Everybody's got to be involved, and Texas has really become a destination for people to watch, whether it's on a Friday or Saturday night or it's a Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon. And so we're really excited about the future. There have been different things thrown at us this year and for everyone this season, I'm sure you included and everyone else. But these are the things that present themselves, and we got to roll with it. We got to adjust where we can. And 2021 should be really, really promising and exciting. And now that we've seen what can happen when the purses go up, and you're seeing our field size just continue to be up there, our handle numbers are good. We've been able to consistently run 10 races on a card. The energy and the excitement is very, very positive as far as that racing has been throughout the season. So I've been happy to have been a part of it. I'm hoping that I'm a small part of how our product is growing and how I can grow with Sam Houston Race Park. And once we get past COVID-19 and able to welcome folks back to the track, back to Sam Houston Race Park, I think that we're just going to be better for it. But we really appreciate the support from TTA, the legislation, everyone in Texas that has jumped in, and we're getting things going in Texas, and our racing is really improving, and we know people are watching us out there, and we got low takeout, Mike, for 12%. So, you know, multi-leg wagers, that's always exciting for those folks that are wagering across the country.
Yeah, something to remember there, too, definitely. 7 stakes races, first post, 6:45 Central Time. That's 7:45 Eastern on Texas Champions Night at Sam Houston. Chris, as always, appreciate the visit. Like all of our guests, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and you can embrace your passion and wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. Thanks for the visit, my friend, and enjoy the night. Stay safe.
I appreciate you, Mike. You guys as well.
All right, thanks, Chris. Chris Griffin here on HRRN. Hey, don't forget that we are accepting, and hopefully you'll send them to us, your foal pictures here this morning on our social media, and retweeting them and getting the word out of all the positive things happening in the sport. And there are on the backside of things with the folks working with the horses, those of you that are working with the babies. It is foaling season. It is breeding season. So many of you doing such a great job, and we want to see those baby pictures. So tweet to us using hashtag HRRNFoals. And everybody can find the pictures of all the babies around the country through our social media. You can also do that on Facebook and send us those pictures. But we want to hear from you. hashtag HRRN Foles at HRRN on Twitter. It is time now for our monthly visit with the folks over at Four Roses Bourbon in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, and once again, master distiller Brent Elliott. Since 1888, Four Roses has been made with the same passion and handcrafted as only they can. And this interview, much like the iconic bourbon, handcrafted by Four Roses. And today I have the privilege of visiting with Brent Elliott, who is the master distiller and quality director here at Four Roses. Brent, really appreciate the visit. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for coming out, Mike.
So what is it that makes Four Roses bourbon so unique?
That's a good question. I think if you, and the simple answer is just the taste, the quality. I think we're very proud of what we do here. You know, every Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey has its profile. Every bourbon whiskey that's out there is special in its own right. I feel like ours has its niche. I think it's very, very crisp, very delicate, very smooth, easy to drink. And there are ways we achieve that. We always like to talk about, first, our single-story warehouses that we use. You know, if you look at the aging of bourbon, you always hear that Kentucky is ideal for aging bourbon because the temperature variations. We have very hot summers, very cold winters. So from right there, you realize that temperature plays a fundamental role in how bourbon ages. And if you look at what we do, we have single-story warehouses because that gives us a more consistent temperature variation from the bottom to the top of our warehouses. So when we go to pull barrels out, you know, 5, 6, 10 years after they're put in, we don't have to worry too much about the ones at the top being remarkably different from the ones at the bottom, which there are ways around that. Many distilleries do that. You know, they just create different products depending on what section of the warehouse it came from. But for us, we like them to be consistent so that we don't have to worry too much about the differences. And that's really important because of what I'm going to talk about next. That's another part of our uniqueness is we create different bourbon recipes here. And I don't mean labels. Yes, we have different products. We have the Four Roses Bourbon, the Four Roses Small Batch, and the Single Barrel that you can get on the shelf pretty much anywhere. But each one of those is made with different recipes. And the way we do that is by utilizing different mash bills, which is a grain recipe. Now, both of them use corn, obviously, as the primary grain. They have to be bourbon. We use rye as our secondary, or flavoring grain. Gives a lot of nice spice, structure, backbone to the bourbon, and then a small portion of malted barley. So we have two different mash bills or ratios of those grains, both high in rye. One extremely high; it's 35% rye in the mash bill, which is higher than just about any bourbon out there, probably more than any other major distillery is producing. And then we have the lower rye mash bill, which is 20%. So we start with that foundation. We have two foundations. That is the mash, and then we ferment each one of those, or either one of those, with one of five different yeast strains. Now, all yeast does the same thing. It creates alcohol. That's why it's used. But there's also a small portion of what we refer to as congeners, these other byproducts of fermentation that are very important to the flavor of the particular spirit that's being made. And for us, each one of these creates different flavors, whether it's fruity, spicy, floral, herbal, whatever it might be. It has... Each one of these yeast strains creates those flavors on top of the mash bill. So two mash bills, five yeast strains, that's how we arrive at 10 recipes. And then with those recipes, we're able to create uniquely or fundamentally different products. So our Four Roses Bourbon, that uses up to all 10 of those recipes. Small batch is four of them. And our standard 100 proof single barrel is always the same recipe.
Well, I'd imagine you have to be a master distiller just to keep it all straight.
Yeah, it was a mouthful, wasn't it?
Brent Elliott, he is the master distiller and quality director here at Four Roses. You can learn more by visiting fourrosesbourbon.com. Thanks, Brent.
Thank you, Mike.
When I come back, it is time for this week's edition of Calling All Three-Year-Olds, presented by Spendthrift, and a visit with Todd Roberts, the founder of Roberts Communications Network, to talk a little simulcasting. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
The Florida thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association, and what a successful 75 it has been. Florida breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, and along the way, making 170 racehorse millionaires, plus 66 Eclipse Awards, with two Florida breds, Imperial Hint and World of Trouble, receiving Eclipse Award nominations in 2020. The FTBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
Racing at Gulfstream.
Catch year-round world-class horse racing whenever you'd like from North America's premier thoroughbred horse racing destination, Gulfstream Park. With the championship meet in full swing, join us Saturday, March 28th for the Grade 1 Florida Derby as the top three-year-old thoroughbreds compete for their chance to be legends. Feel the heart-pounding action up close with viewing from the rail or enjoy within the comfort of our trackside restaurants. Visit GulfstreamPark.com for more information. Gulfstream Park thrills at every turn.
Adena Springs bred, raced, and developed Awesome Again and Ghost Sapper into important stallions. Now comes Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, bred, raced, and backed by the strength of Adena. A Hall of Fame runner like his sire and grandsire, Shaman Ghost captured the classic Queen's Plate at 3 en route to his Sovereign Award Championship. At ages 4 and 5, Shaman Ghost made cross-country history as the only horse in the past 30 years to capture both the Woodward Stakes and Santa Anita Handicap.
Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile.
Shaman Ghost would go on to earn over $3.8 million with repeated success at the highest level. Additional graded wins include the Grade 2 Brooklyn Invitational, the Marine Stakes, and Pimlico Special, before defeating the likes of Keen Ice and California Chrome, when second to Arrogate in the inaugural $16 million Pegasus World Cup. Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, standing at Adena Springs, Kentucky. Look for his fantastic first yearlings at the sales in 2020.
Racing fans, live racing will be conducted this weekend at Santa Anita Park. However, in accordance with recent health dictates issued by the state of California, Santa Anita is temporarily closed to the public for both training and racing. Santa Anita's races can be viewed live in several ways, including via live stream at santaanita.com or at NBC Sportsnet and TVG Network. While Santa Anita is closed to the public, wagering will be available online via our new app, First Bet, and via the ExpressBet app. First Bet, that's the number one in the letters ST, can be downloaded on your Apple phone. Or you can play Santa Anita online at firstbet.com. Although we are currently closed to the public, Santa Anita is conducting live racing each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We thank all of our fans for your patience during this period of public health concern, and we hope to reopen to the public as soon as possible. Please visit santaanita.com for updates.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Nadal has put away American Theorem. He must deal with Three Technique, who's on the attack in second. Silver Prospector rides the rail in third. Nadal has a final 3/16, and this is the acid test, and he leads by a length and a half. Three Technique to the outside. Here comes Coach Baugh, a massive long shot running a big race between horses. Goes Accession, who's come from the back of the pack. And look at this. It is Accession and Nadal. Nadal, Accession, Nadal aces the Rebel. Wow, what a race. Accession came out of the clouds for second. It is close for third between Three Technique and Basin.
A fixed offer with the call of last weekend's Rebel Stakes, and Nadal remaining undefeated for trainer Bob Baffert. A perfect 3-for-3 with that game victory. He's one of the horses that will be considered for the Kentucky Derby now in September. We'll see how Bob decides to handle Nadal and his campaign as we move closer to that date throughout the summer and all the different prep races that horses will be required to compete in to earn their spot. But Nadal's points from last week's Rebel will indeed count toward a spot in the starting gate. And just wondering if Nadal is one of the horses on Bobby Newman's top five in our Calling All Three-Year-Olds presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
We saw a couple of gritty performances on the Derby Trail last weekend. Let's start at Oaklawn Park in the $1 million Rebel Stakes, which also held 50 Derby points for the winner. Bob Baffert's undefeated Nadal was making his first start outside California, his first start around two turns, and trying a racetrack that was labeled sloppy. He was also facing a strong field loaded with other speed. But he overcame all of those obstacles to gut out a wire-to-wire score and win by almost a length. The final time of 1:44.4 wasn't flashy, but the way he did it certainly was impressive. The Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway brought us a great stretch duel between the two favorites, Invader and Field Pass. Invader took a brief lead at the top of the lane, but Irad Ortiz and Field Pass would not be denied and grinded away to win by a neck. Pace setter Fancy Liquor checked in third. The Louisiana Derby takes place this afternoon. The winner earns 100 Derby points, while the runner-up gets 40, and a full field of 14 is set to battle for the $1 million purse. Major Fed, Wells Bayou, Royal Act, Enforceable, Silver State, and Modernist are just some of the contenders in the most evenly matched Derby prep of the season thus far. It's a fantastic betting race. Unfortunately, we lost a few important Derby preps with the cancellation of the Bluegrass Stakes and Sunland Park Derby, but don't be surprised if the revised date of the Kentucky Derby means reshuffling of other three-year-old stakes and additional opportunities to earn those valuable Derby points. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Spendthrift Farm is at it again, now offering breeders our best incentives yet, including deep discounts on young stallions and proven stallions. And for the first time, 30 days paid boarding at the farm of your choice so that you can breed your mare to a stallion from the most diverse roster in North America without the burden of boarding costs. Serious deals on serious stallions, only at Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm. Call today to learn more, 859-294-0030, or visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Numbers 1 and 2, the 1-2 finishers in the San Felipe, Authentic and Honor AP, they could meet once again in the Santa Anita Derby on April 4th. Number 3, Independence Hall, suffered his first defeat in the Sam F. Davis, looks to rebound in the Florida Derby on March 28th. Number 4, King Guillermo, he won the Tampa Bay Derby, originally was going to go straight to Kentucky for the first Saturday in May. Now with the revised date, may run once or twice more before the Kentucky Derby. And number 5, Sole Volante, he finished second to King Guillermo in the Tampa Bay Derby, may run in the Arkansas Derby for his next start. Couple of honorable mentions, Tis the Law, possibly going to be favored in the Florida Derby on March 28th, and Maxfield, now with the new date for the Kentucky Derby, he should have plenty of time to earn those valuable Derby points. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Old segment, presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
Well, and again, if for some reason you have not heard the news, the Derby, now September 5th, Labor Day weekend, 168 days, 7 hours, 8 minutes, and 20 seconds away from right now. Of course, we'll be there as your official radio home here on the Horse Racing Radio Network in partnership with NBC Sports and with Westwood One. Todd Roberts is with Roberts Communications Network, and never in the history of the sport, I would say, and I may be going out on a limb here a little bit, has simulcasting been more important to our industry with so many racetracks now running races without fans in attendance? The only way many of us can experience the sport is through simulcasting, and that is where Todd comes into play, and he is with me now live from Las Vegas here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Todd, good morning. Yep, we lost him. We'll get Todd back on here in just a minute. But yeah, you think about the sport and where we are currently with the racetracks that are still running and the fact that you can't be there to watch the races live. This is the only way you can experience our sport. And I can remember years and years ago when I first started on radio, 15, 17 years ago now. Wow. And my former co-host and mentor, Pete Kulis, would always go on about, you know, simulcasting and is it necessary, and we're better off having fans come out to the racetrack. Well, yeah, I guess from a wagering perspective, you are. But simulcasting, especially at this time, has been somewhat of a savior for the sport of thoroughbred racing. And again, welcoming Todd Roberts from Roberts Communications Network here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Todd, good morning.
Morning.
Some challenging times, to say the least, my friend.
Yes, they are. This is a once-in-a-lifetime, hopefully, occurrence, and it's not fun.
You know, I found it fascinating. And by the way, my thanks to Ed Bowen over at the Jockey Club for recommending this particular topic for this program, because I think it's so pertinent now. With so many racetracks not allowing fans in attendance, the only way, Todd, that we can experience the sport is through simulcasts of those particular races that are still being contested. Where do you view simulcasting in this particular era, if you will, that we're in right now?
Well, it's certainly the way the sport has moved. And if you look at recent stats, about 91% of the handle takes place off track now. So from that, we then saw a further shift where probably, and this is a much harder thing to estimate, but probably 25 to 30% of that off-track handle is actually happening at account wagering companies online as opposed to in a brick-and-mortar facility. So in circumstances like we're in right now, actually the simulcast outlet market, brick-and-mortar, is really starting to shut down, and more of the activity is moving into account wagering.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And you throw out those numbers, and I think some people may be taken back by that, you know, this is the new era, but it really is. I mean, this has been the game and the environment that we've been working in for quite some time now, hasn't it?
It is. And what we have always said on our side of this equation is that racing needs to follow suit with what Major League Sports did. They were in the same kind of dilemma that we were. People weren't going to the stadiums to see games. The stadiums were in states of disrepair. And they used TV money to broaden the sport's economic base. And remember, that was a fear that people had, that was that, oh, if we broadcast games, people won't go to the stadiums. Well, kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, because who would want to go to a stadium when you could sit in the comfort of your living room and the stadium was such a bad experience? But then what happened, starting as far back as I can remember, perhaps with Camden Yards in Baltimore, they built this great, cool stadium, and people wanted to go see the game in person and experience the stadium, believe it or not. And that spawned tons of stadium rebuilds. And now Major League Sports gets the benefit of both the TV experience and money, and the games are sold out and ticket prices are at a premium. And, of course, with that goes premium prices on food and beverage. And they've come full circle and really done their job in creating a reason for fans to go to a stadium. In our sport, some of the tracks are starting to do just that. Santa Anita's done a great job of creating a beautiful on-track experience. Keeneland, of course, has always done it. And more tracks are taking parts of their track and trying to make it worth coming to. So for those who fear simulcasting and fear the shift, you have to kind of look at the big picture and realize where ultimately it could go if we do it right. And that's the problem, because we don't have a league and we don't have central organization. And so those kinds of positive change come much slower in this industry.
So what, with that being said, Todd, what are some of the biggest challenges facing you and your company as you look to move this forward going into the coming years?
Well, I think the immediate challenge was that the simulcast industry as we knew it was really contained within the North American borders. That's where the majority of the money was being generated. And we had some distribution into Latin America, but the area had a lot of piracy problems and a lot of instability because of the government situation, say in Venezuela, for instance. But over the last 3 years, our company went on a super aggressive investment plan, and we built out our network onto 6 continents and 33 countries. So what in probably the first 30 years of my career was not a market, being international, all of a sudden became a market. And incredibly, it was wagering companies around the world needing content. And they didn't have the issue about the content being in the wrong time slot, because that was always the challenge.
Apparently, the challenge right now is the phone connection with Todd Roberts out in Las Vegas. And I'm going to ask him this question next, by the way. He is, you know, obviously talking about simulcasting. He's the founder of Roberts Communication Network. But I'm going to ask him how he has had to adjust the way that he is doing business, considering everything that's taken place now in our country with this COVID-19 spread. And I'll ask him that coming up, because I'm sure there are some adjustments he's had to make. And he may be in an area right now that is not obviously conducive to phone connections and those types of things. So we'll try to get Todd back on the phone with us here, and hopefully we can. But you hear him talk about simulcasting and the spread of simulcasting, his expansion, his aggressive approach to trying to expand that. And as I told you, when I first started on radio, this was something we would talk about quite often, and mainly because of the fact that my former co-host was very much old school and a believer that simulcasting would be the death of the sport of thoroughbred racing and not help it grow. Well, now, sitting here today, when you don't have an opportunity to have fans in attendance because of a major health crisis like this, then you need an outlet. You need some other way for people to experience the sport. And I think that's true, not just in a time like this, but in all time periods. And Todd going through and laying that out for us. He is back on the line with us now. Todd, you were talking about that aggressive approach, the investment model that you put into place, expanding the offerings and the simulcast signals on different continents. So continue with that conversation, please.
Yeah, so historically the time slots were the challenge, because even though we had content, nobody wanted content at 3 a.m. in a brick and mortar facility. But account wagering globally expanded, and that started the need for our content. And from there, incredibly, brick and mortar grew internationally, and people started to supplement content into later hours and earlier hours than they ever thought they would. And so this expansion that we went through is pretty much complete now, and it gives certainly American content producers, being the racetracks, an opportunity to expand their revenue bases like they've never done since the explosion of simulcasting back in the, let's say the 90s. And by that, I mean getting distribution into more outlets. Sometimes the economics don't always work out, as I'm sure you've talked about previously, but this opportunity is going to be really crucial in the coming next 2 or 3 months with the coronavirus, because simulcast outlets are closing all over the world, and account wagering is the only game in town pretty much. So if tracks can find a way to stay open and race without the public entering the facility, it may just be the salvation of the entire racing industry, because of these international markets who have no content. And whoever's able to stay open is going to make money that they probably wouldn't have made 3 years ago.
Well, that's perfect. You led me right into my next question, Todd. And about a minute and a half or so left before I have to get to the final commercial break on the show. But how have you had to adjust the way that you are doing business now with all of the restrictions put in place and the different protocols put in place to protect us from the virus?
So our company has always had a strong emphasis on being operated by remote control. So the network itself is doing exactly what it's designed to do, and it's not impacted, obviously, by viruses and such. However, we do have most of our important technical employees concentrated in a network operations center. So we've had to literally buy 60 computers overnight 2 days ago and disperse them to employees, so that in the event we're shut out completely from entering our building, we can still operate this network from home. And as of yesterday, 40 out of 70 post-racetracks were still operating. So that's 58% of all the tracks that are currently running at this time of year are still open. So that gives us enough content to distribute, and we're just going to hunker down and try to keep the network going with content from home if we have to.
Todd Roberts, like all the guests who appear on this program every week, going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Todd, listen, I got to get to this final commercial break, but really appreciate you getting up early and being with us here this morning. And all the best moving forward. Keep it rolling.
My pleasure. Stay safe.
All right, you too. Todd Roberts here on HRRN. Quick reminder before I do get to this final break, Todd mentioned the investment that they've had to make in new computers to make sure that all of their personnel can work remotely. Just so you are aware, we are still planning on being here for you on the Horse Racing Radio Network, providing you with the shows and the content that you expect every single week as scheduled. We have kind of done that same thing, and we are making those decisions to put equipment in different places so that our team can continue to bring you our talk shows each and every week and bring you that content you come to expect. So visit our website, horseracingradio.net. Tune in, send us an email, tweet to us at HRN. We are going to be here for you to give you that little bit of an escape, talk about horse racing, give you some special guests, look back on some special moments in the sport. We'll do all of that each and every week for you. So horseracingradio.net at HRN on Twitter. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Spendthrift Farm is at it again, now offering breeders our best incentives yet, including deep discounts on young stallions and proven stallions. And for the first time, 30 days paid boarding at the farm of your choice so that you can breed your mare to a stallion from the most diverse roster in North America without the burden of boarding costs. Serious deals on serious stallions, only at Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm. Call today to learn more, 859-294-0030, or visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
The National HPPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HPPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HPPA is doing for you.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti in a goal. Caraconti.
Gainsway stallion Caraconti. A precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4 fifths, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. Caraconti possesses a strong Stormcat male line and hails from a top female family, which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. The only second crop sire with graded stakes winners on dirt and turf, Caraconti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes Sol Volante, winner of the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis Stakes, and undefeated colt Kenzai Warrior, who is pointed to the Group 1 English 2000 Guineas. Value priced at just $10,000, Caraconti gets the gold, according to Chris McGrath's Value Podium in the TDN. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Caraconti at Gainesway.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Remember to download a copy of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet today from the App Store or Google Play. And don't miss their special, which is going on right now, 12 weekly issues for only $12. Go to bloodhorse.com/TC. And during these unprecedented times, keep abreast of the changes and happenings impacting our industry. Download the free Blood Horse Daily app or have an email sent to you once a day. That's the Blood Horse Daily. It has the largest subscriber base of any thoroughbred industry electronic daily newsletter. Well, my thanks to all of our guests for helping to make this show possible this morning, starting with Ed DeRosa from Twin Spires and Briss in the first half of the program, Hall of Famer Bill Mott, who visited with Anthony on Red Brand Radio on Thursday, Chris Griffin from Sam Houston, and Todd Roberts just a few moments ago. And, of course, to all of you who took time to send us those awesome foal pictures, keep them coming at HRN on Twitter, hashtag HRRN foals, and people can find them that way. Let us know your favorite foal picture. Just send it along and keep them coming. We'll keep retweeting throughout the day for you here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Everybody stay safe and stay healthy. Stay home if you can, and take care of one another. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, here in our Lexington studios, and to Chauncey for handling all of our social media. As always, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next week on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Go Steelers!